Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 236, and it's proudly brought to you by the ever-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you're interested in supporting the show directly, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. Hey Jason, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Recording this, I think, well in advance of its actual go-live date. So,
yeah, a week early.
You know, we've gone from mm-hmm. snow to heat, back to snow, and now it's warming up again. And who knows what it'll be by the time this goes up. But I will be in Scotland by the time this one hits people's ears. So pretty excited for that.
Yeah, like you said, you know, with us recording this one a week early to cover for some of that travel, it kind of changes the intro, that not much use for the weather and that sort of thing. And really no kind of distinctive news or whatever. Roughly around the time this episode comes out, there'll also be a Q&A coming out. So if you're on the supporter side of the equation, expect to see the March Q&A shortly. We got some really great questions in there, so definitely looking forward to recording that and having it up roughly around the same time this goes out towards the end of the month. But yeah, I guess we've talked about you prepping for the trip over the last couple episodes, and at least as people are listening to this, you're already there, so I'm sure Scotland is, of course, lovely.
Right.
We do have kind of a cool offer. It's not something we do that often, but a friend of TGN and a supporter of TGN reached out to us with sort of a deal on some cool stuff and some product that you and I really like. You want to fill people in on that?
Yeah, sure. Jim, who works with Giant Mouse Knives and is an avid TGN listener and a good member of our Slack community, et cetera, he told us that Giant Mouse is exhibiting at the Windup Show in San Francisco, which, as this episode goes up, I believe on the 27th, will be starting the very next day. And kind of in honor of that and in honor of his love for TGN and our community, he's offering a pretty substantial discount on any Giant Mouse products, either at Wind Up in San Francisco, if you happen to be going for it, or if you're ordering online. And so kind of the details that Jim provided to us, and we thank Jim a lot for this. This is really generous and really great of him to do. It's a 30% discount code that will run during the same days as the San Francisco show. So that's April 28th to April 30th. So I believe that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And this is open to any TGN members to use. And also then if members attend the show, the Wind Up San Francisco show, you can mention that you're a TGN member and you can get 40% off at the show. So 30% online or 40% if you buy something in person at the Wind Up show.
Nice.
The discount code for the 30% off of the online orders, which is at giantmouse.com, will be, get your pencil ready, WUWFSF-TGN, all caps. And again, it'll be valid from Friday, April 28th at noon Eastern through Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we'll put that code,
very
of course,
cool.
in the show notes, and we'll pop it up on the Slack maybe the day after or the day of this episode going live. So Jim, again, thanks so much. We're both big fans of Giant Mouse and really happy to have you part of the TGN community.
Yeah, and the other thing to make clear is we're not getting a cut of any of this, just in terms of disclosure. There's no kickback from Giant Mouse to us. Jim is, like Jason said, an active member on our Slack, a buddy of ours, and we both have been given knives from the brand. I've actually used mine a ton. It's probably the nicest knife I've ever owned.
Yeah.
And we're more than happy to support Jim, and we like the product, so check that out. Again, that's WUWFSF-TGN. So I guess that's Wind Up Watch Fair San Francisco -TGN is the acronym there. Hit the show notes, that'll be easier, but a nice discount. And like Jason said, thanks so much to Jim and Giant Mouse for offering that. Pretty sweet when we can offer a deal on something we like.
Yeah, amazing.
All right, you want to dip into some wrist check?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll go quickly because you have a pretty interesting one today. I've got my titanium Blancpain 50 fathoms, the big boy that I got for the Polynesia trip. I'm wearing that today. I'm still in my test driving mode for which watch or watches to take to Scotland. And by the time this goes up, that'll be a done deal. And we'll actually find out what I actually did take. But this is in the running. It's kind of an adventure waterproof watch because it looks like a lot of rain over there. But you have something new and interesting that's kind of breaking news, I guess, these days.
I do, yeah. So I was actually tempted to hold episode 235 one day because this watch, it was announced like 7 a.m. Friday the 21st. And so that's a day after, but we didn't end up bothering to do that. But I'm actually wearing the new Marathon Navigator in steel.
Nice.
So this is a watch that for a long time, not from its start, from the start it was in steel, but for a long time has only been offered in that sort of nylon, sort of a plastic style case.
Yeah.
And a great watch, one that we've talked about on the show before, a good value, you know, quartz watch with, you know, that you have to keep in mind that Marathon's business is supplying governments and like contracts.
Yeah.
But I picked one up. I had a meeting with them recently. And so there, by this point, there will be a review or an introducing with some live picks, that sort of thing on Hodinkee. So I'll put that in the show notes if you haven't seen it. But now, you know, the better part of a week after it came out, I've been wearing it for 4 or 5 days now. It's 41 millimeters. It's 11 millimeters thick, 20 millimeter drilled lugs, sapphire crystal, 100 meters water resistance with a screw down crown. And it has the tritium tubes on the dial, the hands, and in the marker at 12. It's a bi-directional 12-hour bezel. Really easy to use. Nice light click. I am super impressed by it. I already really liked the standard one.
Yeah.
As like a not too expensive, subtle, military adjacent sort of design, you know, from a Canadian company. You see a lot of these that have like sterile dials, don't even say Marathon on them. They've got government contract codes on the back. Like there's some cool stuff when you get into the Marathon world. I've owned a TSAR and an MSAR in the past, both of which I really liked, especially the TSAR. Pretty cool, you know, dive watch with, in my world, connections to like Canada's Coast Guard.
Yeah.
And with this one, just exactly a steel navigator. The case shape has been fine-tuned to sit a little flatter on your wrist, so the lugs are a little bit more curved than they were on the original navigator design. But seeing the two right next to each other, it does look like a subtle but higher value evolution of the original. And they're selling for $800. Now, a week after they came out, I have no idea what stock will be. Marathon said they're very serious about having the ability to fulfill as many orders as people are actually keen on, because this is a watch they've been asked for a long time. And certainly it leaked at some point, or elements of this watch have leaked some point in the past couple months. So there were rumors circulating as to what it would be and what movement it has and what it would cost and all these sorts of things. At $800, the thing to keep in mind is you're getting an FO6 ETA quartz, so specifically the FO6 412, which is 10 seconds a year. For someone who might want a quartz tool watch, this, I would say this very quickly jumps into the running next to the CWCs and,
yeah,
and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I just really like it. And the other thing that I'll add is I totally forgot how much I kind of love tritium tubes at night. I don't like, I'm not crazy about the way they look on watches generally.
Yeah, right.
Versus something like Loom. But I think after a few minutes with this watch and the sort of balance that they've struck on the dial in terms of text and the dates at 4:30, everything's very legible. It's very clear. You can see how there's like an intent to this watch that is to tell time before necessarily checking all the boxes of like watch enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also part of the enthusiastic like cycle, is that it's a tool first and the rest second. But at night, man, like middle of the night, this thing's very easy to wear to sleep. It sits nice and low on the wrist. There's no real like sharp edges. It's a really nice grip on the bezel. It's another thing I was impressed by. But the luminous element is so good for low light. Like it's not too bright where your eyes are trying to adjust to it. It's just kind of just right. It's been a long time since I had a watch with tritium tubes, and it's fun every time I go to check the time in the middle of the night when I wake up or whatever and go like, that's so comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, there's zero eye strain in figuring out what time it is, even against something like the Palagos, which is what I've been wearing kind of constantly since I got it. You know, it is an entirely different solution with an entirely different level of performance. You know, you're not getting a wrist shot coming in from a sunny day outside necessarily, yeah, with the big glow like you can with the Vertex.
Right.
I mean, the Vertex is so bright. I think my wrist shot, the Loom shot, was a wrist shot for the Hero for that story, which is not something I can commonly do with any, yeah, watch. Maybe a Seiko here or, yeah, there. It's much less luminous, but in actual low to no light scenarios, it's so nice.
Yeah, it doesn't have that initial burst that then fades. It's like this constant sort of, mm-hmm, not even low level, sort of a medium level. Yeah, if I remember. Does it have different colors for the different locations on the dial? I know the SAR watches did or do. Like, I think the 12 o'clock was different color.
Yeah, the 12 o'clock is orange. and the rest are green.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, all the touch points are great. It wears really well. I've got it on a gray NATO. It comes on a black NATO, so you know how long that lasted for me. And I just really, really like it. And it's another like solid everyday watch that you could buy, especially if you dress more on the casual side, where like something like a military looking watch would suit your style.
Yeah.
And I think if you like the vibe of a Hamilton khaki or something like that, but maybe don't want mechanical,
mm-hmm.
and you want to go quartz, then this one gets you really nice accuracy and the tritium tubes for really not that much more money. You're still well under a grand. Obviously, it's I think a khaki field mechanical is something like $550, but it's nice stuff, and it just kind of does exactly what you want from a watch like this, which is like it's subtle, it's easy to wear. I like that it's all kind of bead blasted, like very satinated sort of finish.
Yeah.
Drilled lugs, you know, it does all the good stuff. I'm looking forward to putting some miles on it and maybe putting together a larger story about kind of the back catalog or the history of the Navigator and how it got us to here.
Yeah, it's a neat watch. I owned one of the kind of the nylon cased ones for a short time. And then I've had marathons in the past, and they're great high quality watches. Of course, now I have the Benrus Type 2, which is a very obvious sort of ancestor, if you will.
Absolutely.
To
with the asymmetrical case and 12-hour bezel, yeah.
And I there has to be some lineage there that I'm not aware of. I know that, I suppose if I dug deeply on the Military Watch Resource site forum, I'd find that whole history, because it went through Benrus and Stocker and Yale, and then for a while, and I think this would be really cool if they did a limited run of when they put Adenac on the dial, kind of Canada spelled mm-hmm. backwards. I don't know. I'm not sure what the purpose of that was, if that was the name of a subsidiary or the company at the time or whatever, but it'd be neat if they did a small run of that for you guys up north.
Yeah. I would also love, you know, they've done a nice job recently of doing white dial SARs.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Then, I mean, a white dial steel Navigator would be really cool.
Yeah.
Even with the black bezel or with a different color bezel. I think they could do a nice job with that, but I it'll be interesting to see if this is something that sits in the lineup with the other Navigators,
yeah.
or kind of goes in its own direction. What do you think of the price point? I think the price point makes sense.
I think so too. I mean,
because a CWC is about $650-700.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's all in kind of that same stratus. You know, when you're talking a steel, well-made steel watch with a quartz movement, I think that's. I would not hesitate to pay that.
It's on the higher side. Like, obviously, you can get a Timex for
sure, or Momentum bucks. Or something. Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
The Momentum's a great point. Yeah, the C quartz definitely offers a different sort of value than this.
Yeah.
Where I think if you're more in the vibe for the military, want the high accuracy, the tritium, then it makes sense. But otherwise, I mean, that C quartz, if you can buy it, that's a lot of value there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from another Canadian company, which is fun.
Yeah.
Very cool. And a big thank you to the folks from Marathon for making sure I could get one before the story came out. And I had a really nice kind of chat at their office. They're about 30 minutes north of me. Met a bunch of their team and had kind of the backstory delivered about the brand and their connections and the fact that, you know, a lot of their manufacturing and connections are in Switzerland, but they're very much, you know, a Toronto-based brand. And, you know, and got to see more of their sort of fulfillment and service and shipping and all that kind of stuff, which operates out of a large area in Toronto here.
Huh. It's cool that it's local. It's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of fun to have, and you have to state some sort of bias, right? Like it's cool. There's a cool factor for me that it's Canadian that may not apply to someone who's not, but I dig it. And you know, that's probably what brought me to Marathon in the first place, was some of the Canadian watch forums or the dive watch forums and people going nuts over TSARs, you know, early Canadian and U.S. contract TSARs that were, I mean, talk about a good bezel, right?
Oh, man. Yeah. Top five for sure.
That's what I've got on my wrist. You know, different vibe than the Blancpain, but I think a very TGN sort of watch. Perfect sort of dock jumping, summer camp in the field, doing all the sort of stuff and never bother taking it off sort of watch. So I think that's how I'm going to kind of use this one for the summer while I've got it. And kudos on Marathon for, I think, giving people what they were asking for, at least. You know, Marathon has sort of a cult following more than a generalist following.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cult side of it, this is a watch that they wanted. So good on them. We're big fans of when brands give people the watches that they want to spend money on. So cool stuff. Speaking of spending money.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of an appropriate, actually both the watches we're wearing are sort of along the lines of the high-low challenge today. Yeah.
We're trying to figure out like something would be fun to fill an episode, you know, with Jason being away. We're not going to be covering like up to the minute news. Obviously we're a week behind on the marathon stuff. And we really like the sort of challenge episodes, whether it's a financial challenge or a brand challenge. And the goal here is it's called the high-low challenge, and we'll have 10,000 hypothetical TGN dollars, which is one-to-one with USD. And the goal is to pick two watches with the widest possible delta in price. So it's a two-watch collection. One of them should be the majority of $10,000, and the other one should be as little as you could figure it out. Is sort of the ideal. So again, to make it very easy, if you spend $100 on your inexpensive watch, you should try and spend as close to $9,900 on the other. And I actually learned a few things in the process of this. One of them being how few $10,000 watches are on the market that I really want.
Yeah, I found the same. There really is only one that kind of hit the mark for me, and everything else was like either a lot lower or. Actually, most of them were a lot lower. There just aren't a lot of watches around that price point that I, you know, really covet or am keen on. I'm curious to see where you settled. I know you kicked around a few ideas, but what, you can go first.
We'll see. What do you think? You think we say our cheap ones first so people can kind of dream on, or we start with the expensive ones first and people have to figure out what we've got, what we might get with the other side? I'm not quite sure, but. Mm. It's interesting because that this little thought exercise highlighted just how strong like the $1,000 to $5,000 category is right now, especially for sports watches.
Yeah.
Because if you're spending a grand, then you're kind of like, in some ways, you're over, the delta is starting to narrow between one. I mean, it's still pretty wide delta, but like spending a grand instead of spending $200 on the inexpensive watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a pairing there, and I hope there's some logic to our pairings, not just the finances, which I think kind of keeps this fun, but it's insane just how good, say, a 5,000. But there's no way, like, I couldn't buy my Pelagos 39 in this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in the middle, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
At least you'd want something like 1,000 and 9,000, or maybe even deeper than that. I guess we'll see. How do you think it? What's the most fun in your mind? Start with the big watches and leave the whatever's left for the guessing, or the other way around.
Given the difficulty we both had choosing the higher end piece, I think it's probably more interesting to start there. I actually personally found it a lot easier to choose the kind of the low end piece in this one. There are just a lot of good, like, inexpensive watches. I mean, you mentioned Timex early on, and even the Navigator. I mean, it's a little high when you're
in the running, I think. Yeah,
it is in the running. I'd probably maybe on the high end of that, on the low end, or on the high end of the low. But anyway, why don't you start with your high pick? Because I'm just dying to know.
I'm worried that you and I may have the same one, and it'll change my second pick pretty substantially. Oh. So how about you go first?
Okay.
On the high pick, and I'll follow up with mine.
Okay.
I want to leave some options on my table because I've got a couple moves, and they're all kind of wild.
All right. Okay. Well, this one probably shouldn't come as much surprise, but it's the Omega Seamaster Diver 300M, the No Time to Die edition.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you'd go that way or Ploprof, because a Ploprof is like $9,000.
I couldn't find a $9,000 Ploprof, but I still...
Oh, I found two or three on Watch Recon.
Okay. I went brand new right off of Omega website. I could click the...
Okay.
Well, I guess you have to contact a boutique. You can't click buy now, but like it's right here in front of me, like $9,500 on the mesh. We've talked about this watch a lot. It's a great watch. I've been on the fence about this piece ever since it came out. Like, one day I look at it and it's like too heavy on the Fotina. I don't like the kind of the broad arrows, a little too on the nose, etc. The case back, whatever. And then like I've tried one on, and when I see pictures of it on different straps on people's wrists, I'm like,
yep.
That could be an awesome, just an awesome watch. Awesome wearing watch, good looking watch, you know, no date. You know, the ties to Bond. I think, yeah, it once I kind of zeroed in on this one, it was like there was no doubt. And I was hoping you wouldn't pick it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a second choice. So
I had five watches.
Wow.
on my possible high list.
Okay.
And that was the only new one.
Oh. Okay.
Everything else is secondhand.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's my favorite Seamaster. It's easily in my top favorite modern Omegas.
Yeah.
I really like the new Bond, the anniversary piece as well.
The 60th anniversary Bond one, I love the blue. I love the anodized aluminum bezel. There are little niggling things I don't like. I don't care for the kind of gimmicky movement animation. I also prefer, I don't like the 60 on the bezel. I mean, I get why they did it. But it's got to be the No Time to Die one. And I think, you know, sometimes I think we're probably all guilty of it, or a lot of us are. You hyperanalyze a watch and you start to look for things to critique and things to make fun of or roll your eyes at, whatever. But in the end, like, who cares if it's heavy-handed on the Bond tie-in? Who cares if it's got, overly tan Fotina? You know, I mean, in the end, like, you see this watch and you're like, that's a cool watch. Like, if I wasn't as ingrained in the watch industry for so many years and have looked at hundreds and thousands of watches and find little things to nitpick, it's just a cool piece. It's just a cool watch. And in this case, it's like the perfect choice for the high end, because, you know, I think in a challenge like this, the temptation is to go, the high end one is kind of a nicer watch that maybe you don't wear as much, and the low end one is the beater that you wear most often. I almost think with my picks, you'll find out. I think it kind of goes the other way around. So,
yeah, I think that's a good pick. A great watch. Definitely one that was on my list. And I guess I gave away that the Ploprof also was. My worry is that, if I were transitioning into my pick, when it comes to the Ploprof, it is going to be too big for me to wear frequently. Oh. And if we're going to two watches, it needs to be, both of them need to be basically everyday watches. Mm-hmm. And my goal was to buy two watches with the $10,000 that would seldom need to be worn in the same scenario.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But both could be worn 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a tough marker.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good criteria though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Man, like, this is funny because it'd be easier if it had been three watches. It would have been way easier at $15,000.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Like, the 10 really got me. You know, you can't get, what else did I look at? We get into this, the other options after when we close out the two picks. I won't belabor that point at this moment. So I'm going to go with, and I found two of them for $9,800 on Watch Recon.
Yeah.
And it's a 16700 GMT Master. So the last of the single GMT Masters, non-twos.
Wow, that's a good find. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not just one. I found two of them, and the average price between the two is $9,800.
Okay.
Both were being offered with boxes and papers.
Wow.
One was serviced and one wasn't. So this originally comes from because in my mind, if you, like, even up until the everything bubble a couple years ago, if you really wanted a Rolex that could do everything, it was a 16710.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could dive with that watch on. You could explore every part of the world with that watch on. I mean, obviously, the blue-red bezel, being a Rolex, there's maybe areas you don't want to wear it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We all know that. But those are, like, largely a perfect watch. But those right now, the floor on those is about 12.8, which is the cost of a new GMT Master.
Yeah, right.
Which, so that's going to lead to some consternation for some folks.
Mm-hmm.
But a 16700, not the 50 or the 60, both of which are, you know, because there was a weird overlap where they made the GMT Master and the GMT Master 2 until 1999.
Yeah.
When the 16710 came out, they had the 3185, which does the local jumping. So for those of you keeping score, James, me, did just pick a GMT Master that doesn't even have local jumping. You have to use the bezel. It essentially has a locked 24-hour hand.
Yeah.
And you reference everything against the bezel. That wouldn't bother me. You know, this would be a watch that was probably made from the late 80s into the 90s, so it should be serviced and capable to be worn just like any sports watch. I have my Explorer 2 is only a little bit older than that. A little bit younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
It was important to me that, like I said previously, you could wear this every day. This is a watch that could be serviced, would still be 100 meters water resistant. I could more than happy to use the bezel to do my GMT timing. I love the way they look. I like the size. It's a proper 5-digit Rolex. It's not the ideal GMT Master, which would be in my mind a 16710, but at $9,800, that leaves me $200 for my next watch. And the other thing I wanted to make clear is I really didn't want to pick the Explorer 2 because it felt like a boring pick. I have that watch.
Yeah, true.
People
yeah.
kind of bring it up to me a lot as a kind of fan, a big fan of the 16570 Polar. I have one. I just thought it'd be boring. Obviously, there's a it's hard to imagine a world where I wouldn't want that watch.
Right.
But I wanted to be a little bit more interesting with my picks. And they're still a little bit tough to find under 10 grand. Not impossible these days. It looks like, you know, I joke that five-digit Rolexes should be four-digit prices. Mm-hmm. We're not there with every five-digit reference.
Yeah.
But that's an option. And I found a couple other cool ones that we can talk about once we get through our kind of cheaper picks as well. But what do you think of a 16700? Is that just a cop-out so I could get a Rolex in under 10 grand?
No, I think it's a huge win, especially, I mean, if you found one with box and papers. I think I was tempted to say when you announced, I was like, oh, he wins this round. You know, I just thought like, that's the winning pick. I think the kind of geared 24-hour hand that you'd have to use the bezel, I think it feels very old school. It feels like proper,
yeah, sure,
like original GMT design. You know, those are great watches. On the other hand, I think I win under different criteria. I think kind of, you know, modern loom and materials and that sort of thing. So I think they're both really good picks for that money. I think we've really like maxed out. You could argue the Omega's, you know, potentially even overpriced, but that feels like a good value.
Well, the Rolex is too, Rolex. Though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But think about what you're getting.
Yeah. I did really want something that I genuinely believed that, one, wasn't an Explorer, two, kind of boring, like I said. And on the other side, that I feel like I would wear and own and really enjoy.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are, I think the 16700 started in 88, so I can't get like a birth year one, which would have been kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Having been born in 86, but then any of the early GMT Master 2s all crack into five digits for the price.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that this gave me, you know, the blue-red bezel or the black bezel, both pretty hot watches. And it is kind of cool that it's the last reference of the original layout and function of the GMT Master.
Yeah, definitely.
But a cool piece, and that takes me to, we're going to say $9,800, and Jason, you're at $9,500?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you got a lot more to spend.
Yeah, I do.
On the second one than I do. Let's get into your quote unquote low pick. What'd you go with?
Yeah, so I was tempted to go with, you know, this is the realm of the, in my mind, I could have, you know, aimed for something Timex, Citizen, Seiko at a very low end, but I kind of like the micro brand level, where you kind of get to know the people behind the brand and they're kind of building their passion projects and offering a really good value. And so I was kind of split between getting something like a Skirfa, you know, given our connection with Paul and our deep love for Skirfa watches. But I didn't want anything left over. And so I went with a Laurier Gemini Series 2. This is their hand-wound chronograph. It's a Seagull movement. So, you know, I know some people have their reservations about that, but this is a $500 watch. And we know the folks from Laurier. I'm sure if anything, you know, went wrong with it in the first year or two, they'd do right by me. And I think it's a super handsome watch. It has, you know, kind of vibes from, you know, old Hoyers and old Daytonas. You know, having seen their watches in person and met them at Windup and other places, I just really like what they're doing. I think they have a real sort of eye for some of the small details. I think they make an amazing watch. And this is, let me think here. It's $499. So I have a dollar left over. I mean,
$1, you know, not bad.
$1. Okay. There's no tax and shipping and all this. We'll have to figure something out there, but, yeah. And I think, you know, my logic with this one was, if I go Skirfa, you know, it's another dive watch. It's if I'm having the Seamaster, chances are that's going to be my dive watch. If we're talking a two watch collection, I need something fairly different from that Omega to kind of wear on the other days. And I think a hand wound mechanical, you know, Panda chronograph, you know, it on a bracelet, just kind of hits the right mark for me. So.
Yeah. And I also think it's a nice compliment because it has a 12 hour bezel. So this gives you, in a scenario where maybe you're traveling and not diving,
yeah,
the other option of an additional time zone and a watch that's a lot more subtle than an Omega,
yeah, right,
on your wrist, yeah, cool pick. I mean, these are gorgeous watches. I don't think I remember seeing the Gemini.
I don't think they had it
Windup last year,
no.
But they had a couple others, and they were all really, really beautiful watches. And like you said, nice people, and there is a value to. Yeah, buying into that side of the business where it is a quote-unquote mom-and-pop sort of shop, one guy, one gal sort of business. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've seen the Neptune and the Falcon in person, and they're just really impressive, beautiful watches at a fair price. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's a good pick. Super fun.
Yeah. And that gets me right within a dollar of our $10,000 limit. So I'm pretty pleased with that. So
a dollar. So I think I have $7.
Oh, wow.
Left.
I'm curious what you got for you, because what do you have to spend? One something?
I have $200 left.
$200 left. Okay. Yeah.
I have $200 left. And so I consider things like, yeah, the Scirfa, I don't quite have enough for. As much as I enjoy the something like a Timex Q, not something I would wear over the Rolex,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I really wanted something that was like, in a scenario where I didn't want the Rolex, I wanted the perfect watch for that scenario. And I went back and forth a lot and realized what I want is a Garmin Instinct.
Oh, $193. Wow. Okay.
Kind of a perfect two-watch solution if I don't want to pick up and set the Rolex.
Yeah.
The Garmin will do all of that for me if I want to go and do some big physical challenge or measure something on the bike. Like it fills in all the blanks that the Rolex doesn't do.
Yeah.
The Garmin does, and everything the Garmin doesn't do, the Rolex does in spades.
Yeah.
In my opinion, with an old GMT Master, there's not a scenario in my life where I would need a dress watch. That was my other concern, was like, do I want a sports watch and a dress watch?
Right.
At this point, if all I own is a 16700 and a Garmin Instinct, mm-hmm. and I get invited to Black Tie, your boy's putting his Rolex in his pocket.
Right.
And I'll just go proper with no watch on my wrist. It really has come down to when I have the watches that I look at that I constantly bounce between.
Yeah.
It's between a high-quality sports watch, mm-hmm. the Pelagos, the Explorer 2, the Mito, depending on what I'd picked for my expensive watch. I was considering going kind of weird and spending $1,400 on the Mito.
Yeah.
But I think this is like the yin and yang of how I approach day-to-day watches. A really nice steel sports watch and a really good multi-sport smart watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could get a Garmin with maybe... Like if I could get a great sale and get my way into a last gen Phoenix, sure, fine. But the Instinct really doesn't leave anything on the table for me.
Right, right.
Just a good product. I like the company. They're really comfortable on wrist. And if I'm traveling somewhere where you wouldn't want the Rolex, the Garmin's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good pick. It's a surprise pick. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, but I want to keep it interesting.
But I do think that as you were talking, I was thinking like, that's kind of my approach. Although I don't wear smartwatches beyond doing activities. But I do activities almost every day, and so I'm always wearing a Garmin. And I think I remember years ago I was selling a Suunto dive computer that I had, and I was thinking to myself, I think this dive watch, quote unquote, has been on more dives with me and adventures than any watch I own. And you could say the same about a Garmin. Like you go so many miles, you do so many interesting things with a Garmin.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes that sort of go-to. And yeah, this exercise does really speak to like what if you're especially not so much the price element of it, but the fact that it's a two watch collection. It really does say a lot about how you wear your watches and make your choices.
Yeah, and I think for me, these hit the mark,
mm-hmm.
because let's say we consider that the Rolex was $9,000, so I had $1,000 left, and let's say I spent $800 some odd on a CWC.
Yeah,
they're almost too similar.
Right. True. Yeah.
Like if we're only thinking of two, I want like almost polar opposite watches.
Yeah, yeah.
So for my $200, it was either like, could I get a dress watch? And I couldn't get like a Seiko Dolce, the SACM 150.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more than that. So I bounced back and forth, and finally I was like, well, what the heart wants. If I already have what's essentially a perfect everyday watch,
right.
Then the only thing that would be missing would be the multi-feature watch for when I was, biking, hiking, rowing,
yeah.
Had a really busy day and wanted notifications on my wrist, wanted some sleep tracking, wanted the heart rate stuff. Maybe I want to share stats for a hike from something or you go on vacation and you want to bring one watch that does it all. That's the one. You don't have to worry about leaving a Rolex in the hotel room or always having it on your person.
Mm-hmm.
I admit it's maybe not the most glamorous two watch solution, but I mean, you've got a steel Rolex, like it's kind of perfect. And if you don't want the 16700, then sure, it could be an Explorer 2. But the balance for that for me is definitely something like the Instinct. I'm a big fan of the platform, and yeah, I like the idea of a sort of everyday tool watch being the fitness tracker and having that kind of data if you want it, the compass, the this, the notifications, the rest of it. And I for me, that would be the two watch solution. It leaves a dress watch on the table, sure, but with the high low, I think that's pretty high and pretty low. in terms of cost, not in terms of value. I think the Garmin's an excellent value and a great watch for the money. $193 for an Instinct.
Amazing.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they had come below 250, but they've got them. So.
Yeah. 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 They're great watches. My only quibble with my Instinct is, depending on what I'm doing, I find it slightly hard to read the display. If I'm running and my arm is kind of swinging around and I'm bouncing up and down, it's a little harder. If I'm on a bike, I'm more steady. I can see it. But for that, I like the Phoenix. But yeah, the Instinct's a great, great watch. And I think in essence, you've almost done, some people would consider this almost even a one watch collection. I think they wouldn't consider the Instinct like an alternative. You wouldn't wear it as you do a watch, like something like the Rolex. But so you've sort of accomplished that as well. I think, you know, you've got this like one masterpiece steel icon, and then you've got this other one that you sort of wear for, you know, rugged duty and kind of sports and kind of very functional stuff. So, yeah.
So I'm curious then, what else did you have on your high list?
I really didn't. As soon as I found, I knew that for that price point, if I looked at Tudor's website, like I wouldn't come close. Like the whole goal of this, you know, just to remind the listeners, is like we were trying to get as close to the high end, as close to 10,000 as we could get, leaving just enough. And so to do that, like you can't look at, I mean, I guess I could have looked at Seiko or Grand Seiko or something, but
I looked at Grand Seiko.
Yeah. But none of those really kind of light a fire in me. So I think, you know, and then of course I love Tudor, but you know, there's nothing there that's going to like tickle the $10,000 range. And, you know,
yeah.
So that left Omega. And I was like, as soon as I went to Omega and I knew Rolex, the one watch I did consider, but it was nowhere close to the 10,000, was just a straight up 36 millimeter Explorer. But I think those are 7,000.
Yeah. And it's not enough. It's the same problem with the Pelagos.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I also went in Yachtmaster 37 millimeter.
Yeah.
It's only a bit over. I think it's like 11 something, 12 something.
Yeah.
So that was out. I also thought for a moment, oh, wait, is there a way to do a steel Sky Dweller? Which would be such a fun watch to own, especially, but you can't get the steel on the rubber, which I think makes the watch a lot more fun. And it's like 15 or 16 grand.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a different zone.
But as soon as I went Omega, it was like, okay, this is the big, this is the big piece. I'm not going to get, as much as I like Speedmasters, I'm not going to get a Speedmaster because the straight up Moonwatch is well under 10,000.
Yeah.
And it's also not a watch that is as versatile as a dive watch, especially, you know, given the stuff I like to do. And so, at 9,500, it was a no-brainer. As soon as I latched onto the 007 Seamaster, that was the choice. What else did you have? You had the Ploprof.
I had the Ploprof. I had 38 millimeter bathyscaphs. They're like 7 to 8 grand all day long.
Yeah,
blue or gray.
Sure.
I don't love the date placement on those, but they are titanium. It felt like, you know, if it's in the same size range as the Pelagos.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good watch. And I mean, if you want to talk a realistic two watch collection, one of those 38 millimeter bathyscaphs and the Mito would have you at like, you'd have like $500 left ish.
Wow.
Which I think would be an okay. But I wanted to try and conform as heavily to the conceit that like, if you had a budget, you'd spend as much of it as you could on one of the watches, I think, especially if you've been around the block for a decade.
Yeah.
You wouldn't split hairs in the middle. If we said $5,000, I would have found a watch for $12 so I could have gotten a Pelagos 39 or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it would have been that and a Casio F91.
Yeah, yeah.
I searched around and for less than $9,000, you can get a 16600, like a Z serial Sea Dweller.
What?
4,000.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I found two of them for about 80, like one was 92 something and one was 89 something. So this isn't the most desirable generation, but that's still an incredible, like, so at that point, here's another fun two watch that again, I don't think conformed as heavily to the conceit as possible, but that Sea Dweller, the 16600, along with the Mito, and you'd be at like, 10,300.
Yeah.
So if you said I bought the Mito used, there's a few of them on Watch You Seek in our own Slack around $1,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's another option. Trying to think of what else I looked at. Yeah, the little Yachtmaster, too much money. it was kind of a fun thought exercise more than anything else. And I would say that if you're confronted with ever resetting your collection or going, you're saying, I want to go down to two watches, this is the methodology I would actually use.
Mm.
Spend as much as you can on one of the watches.
Yeah.
And then get the strongest possible value out of the second one.
Right.
And I really like my two picks. I mean, there's a weird world in which I would wear both of those around my house at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm also super curious to see what people will put in the comments or Slack, because this isn't like, man, with the automotive episode, we gave like 8 questions and people are still filling them out on the Slack. I'm learning what everybody's first car and their tickets, yeah, and their crashes and the rest,
yeah,
of it.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I love reading them. It's how I've been kind of finishing my phone time in the evening lately. But this one, it's a little bit easier. Like tell us the two models and the two prices. I don't know if anyone can get closer than Jason with his $1 left. And I guess I'm about $7 shy. But I hit a wider delta. I think it's going to be really fun, whether it's the comments on Substack or if you're in the Slack group, you know, go to the episode chat go to the episode chat channel. You can search for that in the channels. There's a lot of channels that people may not realize are available. There's more channels than you're just automatically added to when you jump into the Slack. And if you're keen and you want to be part of those sorts of conversations, it's $5 a month. Gets you into the Slack, gets you the Q&A, that kind of stuff. So consider checking that out at thegrainator.com if you want. But I'm excited to see what other people come up with, because I guarantee we're missing, not something obvious, but we're missing a ton of options for how you could spend $900 to $9,900, right?
Yeah, and especially when you open it up to pre-owned.
And the pre-owned especially, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Fun little challenge.
It was fun. I like these, you know, we kicked around some ideas for this episode, you know, how to reset your collection and if you do a two watch challenge, and then you mentioned this high-low thing, and it was like, okay, that's a unique angle. And I think it adds this little bit of a twist and a little bit of a added challenge to just picking two watches for a certain amount of money. Because if we'd said $10,000, pick any two watches, like we could have split it anyway, and it would have been
maybe the natural easier inclination is to split them down the middle, right?
Yeah.
Loosely?
Yeah.
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 Pretty fun between Omega and Laurier and Garmin and Rolex. a good spread. Right. Not what I expected for your second watch, but I think a solid pick for sure.
All right,
you want to jump into some final notes, put a bow on it?
Yeah, let's do it. I just finished a book by a guy who's probably well-known to a lot of people, Chris Hadfield. He's the retired Canadian astronaut who was kind of well-known for taking a lot of photos when he was on the space station years ago, and he published a book with all of his photos that he took, and then he developed some renown for performing Space Oddity, the David Bowie song. In the ISS, and he's kind of done that on his book tours. And I had a chance to meet him when he was in town for a book signing years ago. Anyway, he wrote a fictional novel, a thriller actually, called The Apollo Murders. And I listened to an audiobook version of it, and it's superb. Like I kind of knew he's a pretty articulate guy, so I knew he'd be a good writer, and his nonfiction book, of photography, has some of his writing in it, and it's good, and he's a witty guy. But A, he's a good writer, and B, he knows his stuff. I mean, obviously, as an astronaut, and as the title suggests, this book is it sort of has a fictional Apollo 18 mission to the moon, and there's all sorts of intrigue involved with an orbiting Soviet spacecraft, as well as some shenanigans that happen, you know, in Houston and in Florida and in space and on the moon. And it all sounds very far-fetched, but when you read it, his attention to detail and his knowledge and obviously his research is so good, as well as his ability to kind of write this cliffhanger thriller with a very believable plot. And a lot of it is grounded in a reality that I didn't even know existed about the Soviet and American space programs. So yeah, if you're looking for a good thriller and you're a bit of a space nut, I highly recommend it. I think it's a tremendous book, whether you get the audiobook or a print version of it. So check it out.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, very cool. I think, and I could have him confused with a different Canadian astronaut, but I think Mr. Hadfield lives like maybe a postal code over from me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I believe that. I know he's got a cabin somewhere in Ontario as well. So maybe his,
maybe we're cabin buddies too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. Look for him on the lake. Yeah.
Man, that sounds fascinating. Very cool stuff. Yeah. I'm always pumped to see him pop up in interviews and kind of give the perspective. Had quite a career, certainly.
Yeah. All right. What do you have?
Yeah. Mine this week is a stand-up special. From a guy named Nate Bargatze. If you like stand-up, you'll know Nate. He's been around for quite some time. He has a new special for Amazon Prime called Hello World. And I don't typically talk a ton about stand-up comedy simply because it's really easy to talk about a comedian that somebody finds offensive these days.
Yeah.
And my range of comedy, like my taste in stand-up is pretty wide. And I definitely don't mind, comedians that are, kind of crude or, bad language, the rest of it, that doesn't really faze me so much. But Nate has a clean show. Hello World is a family-friendly stand-up. It's done in the round. It was filmed in Arizona, and it's really good. It's just super fun. He's very funny. I mean, he's been funny for a long time. This isn't new. His other specials are great as well. But in case you missed it, Nate Bargatze's new stand-up special for Amazon Prime. If you're not a Prime person, it looks like, at least according to their website, you can get a 30-day free trial. So conceivably, you could see this and, like, I don't know, some Yellowstone or something like that for free for a bit. I watched this, and while I was watching it, my wife came in and sat down and chuckled along with it. He's very funny, and it is nice to occasionally have one of these that, like, I don't have to be worried about the volume being too loud and my kids catching something they shouldn't hear.
Right.
You know, especially with stand-up comedy today, it's not so much like they'll hear a swear word or their kids, they hear swear words, that's fine. But, some of the more challenging topics that some of these guys are attempting to handle both successfully and unsuccessfully, I'd rather them not form opinions based on some of these people's, takes that will exist over time. But this was a good one. If you're a Gaffigan fan, I think you'd really like Bargatze. And certainly he's been on a pretty solid rise for the last decade. Yeah.
Huh.
It's a good special.
Nice. I've never heard of him, but sometimes I get in the mood for some good comedy. And that does it for this week's episode. I will be away next week. In reality, I'll be away next week. But also, as you're listening to this, I will not be on next week's TGN. James, you're going to be bringing in an as yet unnamed guest to take the chair.
Yeah, special guest. Do be excited about that. A genuine TGN sort of guy, a recent kind of new friend of mine. And I'm not even sure how to approach everything that we could talk about. So it should be a really fun episode. We always try and go high value if we can't have you on the show, Jason, of course. But I hope you... Again, it's always ridiculous to talk about these sorts of publishing timelines. I hope you're having a lovely time in Scotland as this episode comes out. And by the time the next one comes out, I believe you will be home and I will be on the other side of Canada. So we're working on that as we go. But
all right,
we're on the move. And anything else that you need from us, you can do it via Slack or via the comments on thegrenado.com. And as always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab yourself a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegrenado.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Epictetus, who said, "Wealth consists not of having great possessions, but in having few wants."